Okay, let's unpack this. We are diving into the world of primary research today, and I think of this as finding the absolute bedrock, the raw, unfiltered data that ultimately shapes, pretty much every media headline, every ad, every big decision. We're looking right at the foundational evidence itself.
Exactly. If you're trying to be well-informed, understanding primary research is just crucial because these sources provide firsthand information. Think of it as ground zero information, the original stuff, before anyone else gets a chance to interpret it or, spin it.
Right. And what's interesting about the material we've looked at is it's not just definitions. It gives us this really structured analytical framework, almost like a tactical guide, really for judging how effective these methods actually are. It helps you figure out when that firsthand information is genuinely solid and when it's maybe a bit shaky.
It's a great mission. We're looking at how data actually gets created and captured. And the first thing you notice is just how varied primary research can be. It's a really broad category.
So let's run down the checklist then. Mm-hmm. We are talking about anything where you gather information directly from the source, right? It's all about getting that initial unfiltered perspective.
Right. Systematically, the main types, they range from the really personal to the completely impersonal almost. You've got human interaction methods like face-to-face interviews and structured group settings like focus groups. Then there are the mass collection methods, things like online surveys you carry out yourself and questionnaires and polls. But, and this is important, don't forget the purely observational stuff, original photographs and news footage, and also firsthand accounts someone gives directly to, say, a reporter.
Interviews seem like the most obvious one. A journalist talking to a politician or an expert, maybe a celebrity, they're trying to get that person's original words firsthand to share with your audience. It's direct evidence of what someone actually said.
And that brings us straight into some media jargon. When you see news crews asking people on the street for their opinions, maybe reacting to a budget or something, that specific technique is called a vox pop.
A vox pop. I like that term. Sounds a bit casual, doesn't it?
It does, but it's actually a specific research tool.
Okay.
It is, and it serves a particular purpose. It's designed to get a quick snapshot, often quite emotional, of what the public thinks, usually just for a short soundbite. It's generally not about digging deep into policy details. It's more about capturing the voice of the people, the vox populi, in that moment.
Got it. So a vox pop is quick, it's immediate, often reaction-based.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's shift gears to methods that need a lot more planning, maybe more effort, but potentially give richer insights. Let's talk about the focus group. What makes a focus group different from, say, just chatting with four or five people together?
The difference is really in the structure and the dynamic. It's quite deliberate. A focus group uses participants who've been carefully selected specifically because they reflect a target audience. And crucially, they don't just answer questions individually, they take part in a planned discussion. This lets them share their views, and this is keys to respond to each other.
Yeah.
That interaction, that back and forth, that's where the real value often lies in qualitative research.
Okay, so the goal isn't just individual answers, it's seeing how opinions might form or change, maybe even clash when people interact. Can you give us a solid example of where this is used?
Sure. Think about advertising. Let's say a company is launching a new snack food. They need to know what features people like, obviously, but also why some people might react badly to certain packaging or a specific paste. So in a focus group, when you hear people debating whether the packaging looks too childish or maybe really sleek, you get that nuance. You hear the reasoning behind the reaction, which is something you just don't capture in a simple multiple choice survey.
I can definitely see the value there, that deep qualitative insight. But hang on, doesn't that introduce its own problems? I mean, if you get 10 people in a room, isn't there a risk that one really loud person could dominate the whole conversation, maybe silence the quieter ones? That seems like it could skew the results right away, even if you pick the participants perfectly.
That is absolutely one of the main drawbacks highlighted in the source material. You've hit on a key point. Focus groups are susceptible to things like moderator influence, the environment itself, and yes, definitely the risk of one dominant or participant swaying the group. It makes them relatively expensive and, frankly, quite difficult to run well. However, the upside being able to hear those emotional reactions, see how a group consensus might start to form, often outweighs those risks when you really need that deep understanding. Think about political consultants, for instance. They use focus groups precisely to gauge genuine group reactions to potential policies or messages.
Right. Fascinating. So focus groups offer depth, nuance, rich qualitative stuff, but they're slow, potentially pricey, and vulnerable to group dynamics. Okay, but what about when you need sheer scale? Like advertisers or political pollsters often do. That moves us neatly over to the big beast, online surveys.
Exactly. The shift here is really from depth to breadth. An online survey is built to quickly capture opinions from a huge sample of people drawn from a population. And they're everywhere now, aren't they? On websites, in apps, through emails. They're generally cheap to run, very fast. And the key operational detail here is that the answers, the series of questions asked, are collected and then immediately analyzed by a computer program.
That computer analysis piece, that's the big draw, isn't it? It means you can potentially survey thousands of people in the time it takes to run just one focus group and get the analysis almost instantly. That sounds like a massive advantage for speed and getting those hard numbers, the quantitative results.
Oh, it absolutely is. The speed and the sheer scope are hard to beat. It makes them incredibly useful for things like advertising campaigns that need really fast feedback on whether a message is landing or not. But, and it's a big but, this is where we really need to pause and consider the trade-offs involved.
Yeah, I think I know where you're going with this because I've definitely done this myself. I remember clicking through one of those long, maybe 30-question online surveys. And honestly, by question 15 or 20, I probably wasn't really thinking, just clicking answers to get to the end, maybe for that $5 gift card they promised. Is the very scale of the online survey its own weakness? Does it encourage superficial answers?
It certainly can be. And the source material definitely flags this as a major disadvantage. You lose all the context you get from a face-to-face discussion. And you certainly lose the accountability. The quality of the data relies entirely on how honest and focused those thousands of respondents are being. So, yes, the computer analysis is lightning fast, but it might be analyzing data that's pretty superficial, or maybe even deliberately misleading sometimes. Surveys are great at telling you what people chose, but they rarely tell you why.
Okay, so we have the deep dive interaction methods like focus groups, and then the mass scale quick hit methods like online surveys. But we shouldn't forget, primary sources aren't only about what people say or type into a form.
Precisely. Primary research can be purely visual, purely observational. Things like video footage and photographs of real events are absolutely critical primary sources too. They capture a moment directly without needing an interviewer or a questionnaire. It's immediate evidence.
And we rely on this all the time, don't we? Think about capturing a politician's exact words and, you know, their expression at a press conference.
Mm-hmm.
Or documenting what's happening on the ground in a conflict zone, providing that immediate visual proof of events. Or even just recording what business leaders are saying at an industry event. It's supposed to be objective reality captured.
Supposed to be is definitely the phrase to focus on there, because this is where that critical thinking becomes so, so important. While a video or photo is immediate, it's firsthand, yes, but you always have to ask, who was holding the camera? What were they pointing it at? The biggest challenge with visual evidence is framing, selection, and of course, editing after the fact.
That's a huge point. A written account might give me some context, hopefully, but a single photo can be incredibly selective.
Yeah.
You know, if a photographer snaps a picture of a crowd, where they choose to put the edge of that frame could determine whether we see a peaceful protest or maybe a violent clash happening just outside the shot. So the visual source is real, yes, but how it's presented can introduce a massive bias.
Exactly right. Even when it's something like documenting a conflict or capturing celebrity behavior, the decision of what to film, and just as importantly, what not to film, fundamentally shapes the firsthand information that you end up receiving. Which actually leads us perfectly into the final part of our discussion. Once we have all this raw data from interviews, surveys, photos, whatever, how do we, as people consuming media, actually judge if the method they chose was any good? Was it effective?
Right. This is where we can take that sort of academic structure from the source material and maybe turn it into a practical checklist for ourselves. So next time you see a headline shouting, poll shows 60% of people believe X, don't just swallow the number whole. Let's hit it with maybe a three-part analysis.
Yeah, I think we can boil down the source material's critical criteria into three essential questions you should always ask about any research you encounter.
Okay, question one feels like it's all about methodology and understanding. You have to ask,
Did
they use the right tool for the specific job they were trying to do? And just as importantly, do I understand the built-in flaws of that tool?
Exactly. So let's say a headline claims it knows why people are unhappy with a new government policy. But then you find out the research was just an online survey. Your immediate thought should be, hang on, he goes. An online survey can tell you that people are unhappy, perhaps, but it's very unlikely to capture the complex reasons why. Now, if they'd used a focus group, they might get the why, but then their sample size would be really small. So you need to be able to spot the main advantage and the main disadvantage of whichever method they picked.
Right. Like if a fashion brand wants to know if people actually like the feel of a new type of fabric, and they try to find that out using an online survey, that's immediately a weak choice. They need people to actually touch it, probably in a focus group setting. Okay, so that's step one. Know the methods and their limitations. What's next?
The second key question centers on application and specificity. This means checking the details. Did they use the terminology correctly? Was the method applied appropriately to the right group of people? This is where understanding the term target audience becomes absolutely vital.
Ah, okay. Let's use that soft drink example again. If the company poll says 80% of people love the new flavor, great. But then you discover they only surveyed university students, and the drink is actually aimed at middle-aged people focused on fitness. Well, then the application is just fundamentally flawed, isn't it? You have to ask, did they actually talk to the right group?
Precisely. And you also need to check the operational details if you can find them. For an online survey, what was the sample size? Was it genuinely large and representative of the whole population they're claiming to speak for? Or was it maybe just a small self-selected group who hang out on a particular website? If they present results without those kinds of details, the application feels weak.
Makes sense. Okay, method and application checked. What's the final level?
And finally, the highest level, question three. This involves critical analysis and comparison. This is where you really have to weigh the necessary trade-offs and think about the consequences of the choices made. So you need to compare that inevitable trade-off. You have to consider why maybe the computer-analyzed online survey speed was seen as the biggest advantage. Perhaps they needed to change an ad campaign super quickly. But you also have to analyze why that speed inevitably means losing those subtle emotional cues or those unexpected insights that can only really surface in the interactive environment of a focus group.
So you're basically asking yourself, what did choosing this research method stop them from finding out? Like, if a politician relies only on quick vox pops instead of doing more detailed focus groups, well, that choice suggests they might prioritize getting easy sound bites over understanding complex feedback on their policies. The choice of research method itself tells you something about their goals.
That's exactly it. You analyze the consequences of the method chosen, always remembering that every choice, depth versus breadth, speed versus nuance, comes with a significant cost. Something is always lost.
Okay, so to wrap up our deep dive then, we've journeyed through these primary sources, the firsthand information that really drives so much of what we see and hear, from the intimate setting of a carefully selected focus group to the huge scale, rapidly processed data from an online survey, and that immediate but potentially framed evidence from original photos and videos.
And that really leads us to a final thought for you, the listener, to take away. Whenever you encounter research presented by any organization, could be a company, a government body, a news outlet, apply that critical checklist we talked about. Don't just ask what the research found, ask how they found it. How does the specific research method they chose ultimately shape the firsthand information you're being given? Because quite often, the method they picked tells you as much, if not more, about the organization doing the research than the data itself does.